rows of upright objects that I took at first to be leafless trees, until we rode down to them, and I saw they were great crosses, hundreds of them, to the edge of the city. And at the foot of each cross was a little pile of whitened bones, except for a few crosses on which were twisted blackened shapes that had once been human, preserved by some freak of the weather like so many withered mummies. I could only sit and stare in disbelief, aware that Ulaba was watching me with an expression of amused curiosity, resting easy in her saddle, with one foot cocked up on the crupper. I dare say I was a sight to see, open-mouthed and appalled, asking myself such futile questions as, what kind of creature could have done such a thing? And when? And above all, in God's name, why? Don't misunderstand me. As I've said, I was inured to mass slaughter and barbarous cruelty. When you've seen the mounds of taping dead or the ghastly harvest of an Apache raid, you don't gag or faint, but you can be stricken speechless at the sight of a mass carnage that has been conceived and designed and executed with meticulous care. No wild, hot-blooded massacre, but a planned, methodical operation, with hundreds of timber bulks cut and gathered and fashioned into crosses, hundreds of victims condemned and marshalled and nailed or bound, hundreds of crucifixes reared and planted by hundreds of executioners, hundreds of tortured voices screaming. And whoever had ordered this must have nodded approval and commended it with a, "Well done, men, a good day's work," as he turned away from the ghastly sight and sounds and rode off to see what cook was preparing for supper. Or perhaps he had given orders to crucify the population and been miles away when his troops did the business.
"Oh, no," says Ulaba. "You may be sure that Theodore directed this in person. He would inspect every cross, every hanging body. He may even have driven home nails himself. That is his way, when the devil fit is on him."
"He's mad, then. Stark raving, bloody insane." I was thinking of other charming monarchs I had known, like Ranavalona with her death pits, and that noble savage Gezo of Dahomey, bouncing about on his throne, fairly slobbering with glee as his Amazons sliced up his victims with cleavers. Plainly, Theodore was from the same stable. It's enough to make you turn Republican. Ulaba shrugged.
"Mad, perhaps. Or merely Abyssinian. Oh, you think of us as a fierce, warlike people who love to fight. And we are. And you understand and admire that because it is in your nature also. But do you understand the joy of killing for its own sake? The delight in blood and the agony of the dying?"
She shook her head.
"From all I have heard, that is not in the British nature."
"You should see a Newgate scragging, you poor ignorant aborigine," thinks I. "Or Flashy breaking de Coutet's toes and pitching him into the Jotunschlut with a merry jest. Capital fun, and a deed after your own heart, Sultana. You who gloated so joyfully over Yando's performance on the flying trapeze. But sadistic spite in paying off a personal score is one thing. Torturing to death an entire population whom you don't even know and whose only offence is that their civic rulers gave shelter to a parcel of rebels is rather different." It hadn't properly sunk in when Ulaba had spoken of Theodore sparing no man, woman, or child, but it did now as we rode through that ghastly forest of the dead which even the vultures had abandoned and mounted the slope through the blackened ruins of Gondar City. Eerie silence hung over it like a shroud, and the stench of burned timber was overpowering, even though the fire had been dead for months. I'd have passed the infernal place by, not only for its foulness, but because there might be enemies lurking. But Ulaba, who seemed indifferent to the horrors we'd seen, brushed my fears aside.
"Only ghosts live in Gondar since Theodore destroyed it, more than a year ago. The peasants call it accursed, and even the outlaw bands avoid it."
She turned in her saddle to look back over the charred rubble to the rows of crosses below.
"But it is well that you should see. If your general doubts the kind of enemy he has to deal with, you can tell him."
I wondered if Napier would credit it, that a Christian king could spit in the eye of Christianity by turning crucifixion into a kind of blasphemy.